So we're continuing on in Pirkei Avos, and last week we had a shiur on a Mishnah in the second chapter, second parak, and today I want to speak about the third chapter, up to the third parak, third week after Shavuos. And there's a very, very interesting, in many ways straightforward, but I think in many ways enigmatic Mishnah here in Pirkei Avos in the third chapter, Parak Gimel, Mishnah Tess, and I think it really raises a number of very interesting questions, some of which are kind of technical, you know, linguistic or textual questions on the language of the Mishnah. But the broader point that it brings up really, I think, gets to the heart of a very fundamental question of what is the purpose of wisdom? What is the purpose of knowledge? What's the purpose of studying Torah? So there are very few questions that can be more fundamental than that. So if you take a look at the first source on your sheet, this is the actual Mishnah itself. And there's really two halves of the Mishnah. Each of the halves is has kind of two parts, one mirror of itself, but really you'll see it's basically two statements. V'chanina ben Dosa Omer, kol shiyiras chet'o kodemes l'chachmaso, chachmaso miskayemes. Someone who has a fear of sin, yiras chet, and it comes before, right? That would be the translation of kodemes. It comes before his wisdom. Then chachmasmo mitkayemes. Then his wisdom will, what would you say, is mitkayem?
Endure.
Will endure. It will last. He'll remember maybe his knowledge. Okay. So if you have yiras shamayim, you have fear of heaven, fear of sin before. Very funny choice of words. Before your study, before your wisdom, then your wisdom will be retained. It will be remembered. Something like that. However, the opposite. But if your wisdom, your knowledge comes before your fear of sin, then it won't work. Okay, so that's the first half of the Mishnah, right? Each one, two parts, but it's really just mirror images of itself. Basically, there's one, if we were saying this in the affirmative, there's one affirmative statement by the Mishnah. If your yiras shamayim, your fear of heaven, your fear of sin precedes your wisdom, your knowledge, your learning, then you will retain your learning. That's the affirmative statement, which summarizes, I think, both halves of the Mishnah. Then there's a second point in the Mishnah, which is on the one hand independent, on the other hand clearly related. Kol shema'asav merubin mechachmasel. Here we have two subtle changes, right? Number one is we're not talking about yiras shamayim, fear of heaven, but deeds. Now, presumably we mean good deeds, maybe mitzvos. Anyone who's mitzvos, whose deeds are merubin mechachmaso. They are more, quantitatively, they're greater in quantity, right? In the first half of the Mishnah, it was sequential, it seems like, kodem, before. Here we have a very subtle but significant shift. Kol shemasav merubin mechachmaso. If you have more actions than knowledge, chachmaso metayemes. But it's the same result. Clearly, that's why these statements are together in the Mishnah, because the end result is the same. If you do this, then just like in the first half of the Mishnah, you have the same beneficial result. Your chokhmah, your wisdom, your knowledge, your learning will remain. But chokhmaso meruba mimasav, but if you have more knowledge than actions, than deeds, again, ain chokhmaso mitkayemes. Okay? So let's summarize. It's a little bit of a riddle, but it's really two very, I think, ultimately straightforward points. Because they're straightforward doesn't mean that we understand them. But then at least we'll know what to attack and what to unpack. Right? The first statement of the Mishnah said, you have to have, again, I'm understanding this in the simplest understanding, we'll have to see if that retains. But the simple reading of the Mishnah is, number one is, you have to have yiras chet, fear of sin, before you learn, before your chachmah. It has to be kodem, your chachmah. If you do that, doesn't say you'll be a good person, doesn't say anything about that. You'll be from, that's not what it says. It says, if you do that, if your yiras chet, your fear of sin, is before your learning, you'll retain your learning. Yeah, that's the first half of the Mishnah. The second half of the Mishnah is, if your actions, if your deeds, are greater than, more than, your learning will, again, it doesn't say therefore it makes you a good person, therefore you're eligible chief rabbi, you know, to be Rebbetzin of the Year. It doesn't say that. It says if you have more good deeds than knowledge, your knowledge will ultimately be sustainable, permanent, and retained. So if you had to now reduce that even more, the theme of the Mishnah is knowledge retention. Right? That's what ties the whole mission together. How can you get, you know, rabbi, philosopher, king, please tell me, a wise man, please tell me, how can I retain my knowledge? Right? We read so much, we learn so much. In today's age, we would hear so much, podcasts, this, that. There's so much information overflow in our brains. How do we retain this? Now, it happens to be that the Chazal are filled with memory devices and mnemonics, and that's not what this is. This is not a gimmick. This seems to be something potentially much more fundamental, and there's two different things which are the keys to retaining, and the stakes are high, because it's not saying, well, this is like an added bonus. Because the flip side, which we haven't been focusing on, which is the negative, is also true. Which is, if you wanted to be even harsher, if you wanted to really hammer home the message to yourself or to someone else, you would say it in the negative, which is, if you don't have Yirat Chet first, you will not be able to retain your knowledge. If you don't have more good deeds than learning, you will not be able to retain your knowledge. Okay? That is straightforwardly what the Mishnah is telling us. The problem, so there's a few subtle points which we kind of alluded to, right? Why the shift in language? The first half of the Mishnah, it's Kodem. The second half of the Mishnah, it's Merubin. Right? I think we often translate those, this is, you know, the first half of the Mishnah especially is somewhat familiar, especially if you maybe have gone to seminary or something, people hammer this home to you, or yeshiva. But I think actually people usually translate the first half of the Mishnah, Kodem, as greater. Or maybe not, I don't know. But the point is, the fact that the mission changes the language in two otherwise parallel phrases clearly needs to be addressed. Are we understanding mitkayim? What does that mean, chachma mitkayim? Are we talking about memory? Are we talking about learning? What exactly is going on? And obviously the more fundamental question is, why should any of this be true? There's two things could be important, but not connected. Right? Not everything in life is the knee bone connected to the thigh bone and connected to the, you know, in other words, I should learn, and that's a value, and hopefully we all want to remember what we learn. And I should also have ma'asav, I should do good things, okay? And I should also have yirat chet. But why does one, the absence of one, you know, the mission is basically laying out an image where it's like a thread, right? If you pull on one thread, the whole thing will come falling, you know, fall apart. But why? Why are these interconnected at all? Right, so these are, you know, the technical, so to speak, and the more fundamental question, I think, in addressing and understanding the Mishnah. So, as we always try to do, in this, you know, we always try to take statement by statement in the Mishnah. In this case, the two statements are connected, but we'll take them one at a time. And I think that there is a, at least with some Mefarshim, there really is a common denominator, which I think is it will be a fundamental lesson that we can kind of take out of this. So let's start with moving on in the sources now. Let's start with the first statement of the Mishnah. Yirat chet, fear of sin. I don't want to sin. I care desperately. I really, you know, I know I'm going to because I'm human, but I'm not parv about it. I don't want it to happen. I really care deeply. You know, I'm terrified of doing the wrong thing because I care deeply. That has to happen first. Kodem l'chachma. And if you do that, your chachma is mitkayim. What are we talking about? So let's take a look at some approaches to this half of the Mishnah. Take a look at Rashi, and we've quoted them in the past. Source number three is Machzor Vitri. Machzor Vitri is from the students of Rashi. These are really early sources. And Rashi basically says one thing. It's pretty clear, but it gets even, I think, maybe elaborated on by Machzor Vitri. So it's really one approach. And it's really, interestingly enough, I would say very much not the pshat in the words or not the simple way we had read the words, but maybe that just goes to, it just really underscores why reading the words the way we did, which is the simplest reading of the words in the translation, so hard to understand that I think Rashi almost reinterprets it. Says Rashi, what are we talking about? Source number two, where it's underlined, Shebechol ma'asav ubechol inyanav mekademet yirat chet uba'al lefanav shenizkar hu aleha bechol asher hu oseh. So Rashi is reading the word kodem very sequentially, chronologically. You need to do one thing before the other. But the chiddush of Rashi is, if you see, he did a very subtle move. Chachma is actually not translated as chachma. Chachma is not book knowledge. Right? What did Rashi say? In all of your actions, in all of your dealings, first you had yiras chet. Well, who was talking about actions in the first half of the Mishnah? We're talking about chachma. But Rashi is clearly substituting ma'asav u'b'chol inyanav for chachma. Now, in case you're not convinced, look at the second line of the Mishnah, the second line, he's now translating the words, chachma so mitkayemes. What does that mean? Rashi does the move. He pulls the rabbit out of the hat, ma'asav mitkayemim. Rashi put in you put chachma in the hat, and instead Rashi pulled out ma'asav. They put in two coins, he pulled out a rabbit. Right? By the power vested in him as Rashi, he just changes the words, or changes the meaning of the words. He says, chachma doesn't mean not book knowledge, philosophy, theoretical knowledge. Chachma in this Mishnah means actions. And now, let's reread the Mishnah according to Rashi. If I have Yirat Shamayim before I undertake to do X, Y, and Z, Ma'asav mitkaimim, I'll be actually successful in what I want to do. U'matzliach b'chol asher yifne. Why? Rashi continues. The cave of Yirat Shamayim omedes be'enav, kol sha'a eno nechshav b'ma'asav v'hu nizkar b'yirat cheto. Very simple, says Rashi. Again, it's all simple once you make his humongous leap of turning coins into a rabbit. You've totally reinterpreted the Mishnah. But says Rashi, the Mishnah has nothing to do with memory devices and learning techniques and the ultimate purpose of knowledge. Says Rashi, simple. There are a lot of things you have to do in life. There are the mitzvot, things we do, what we call benam lamakom. There's benam lachavero. There's being a good person, a good neighbor, a good husband, a good wife, a good mother, a good father, a good child. There are a lot of things we do. You can either do them haphazardly, without thinking. You know, they call that multitasking, which is just a nice way of saying I wasn't paying attention to what I was doing. Again, amazingly, women somehow can do this much more successfully than men. I don't think that's just my impression. I think there's like already data on that. Women are better at multitasking. But the real honest truth is that if you're multitasking, it means you're not really paying attention to anything you're doing, at least not fully. That's the definition of multitasking. But you could go through life haphazardly. You're not really paying attention, and you may or may not do the thing well. Right? Or you can be really deliberate, take very seriously the stakes, and really put your best effort in. Once I phrase it that way, then the Mishnah becomes, you know, very almost cliched good advice. The more you are serious about the thing before you do it, the more you seriously contemplate the stakes and the consequences of what if I don't, then more likely you'll do it correctly. So in the religious context, that would be true about anything, right? If you were a computer programmer, if you were an artist, right? Whatever. But it's certainly true, Rashi says, in the Mishnah's case, in your religious life. You're going to do the mitzvah anyway. We're not talking about people who aren't doing mitzvahs. We're talking about doing the mitzvah well. You're going to do it. You're going to go to shul and you're going to daven anyway. You're going to light the candles anyway. You're going to put on tefillin anyway. You're going to do whatever you're doing. The more you take it seriously, you have yirat chet, you realize, you know, this is important. There are consequences to this. Then much more likely you're going to do it well. Right? I just this week, a few days ago, I had a very, very important Zoom meeting. The day before, I was on a different phone call with someone who was going to be on my side of the meeting, planning, okay, you're going to do, this is your role, this is my role, I need a lot of information, can you get it for me? I called him 3 or 4 times, I rehearsed it. Then, the hour before the actual Zoom, I made an outline of my note. That was an example of Rashi's understanding. There was a certain yiras chet, and it wasn't religious then. The point was, there was a yiras chet, meaning I was scared, not in like, you know, babyish kind of way. Like, I understood the stakes, this meeting. I needed it to go well. If it didn't go well, it could have been bad for me. So because I had that, I put in a lot of effort, and hopefully then the result was this, you know, was exactly as I would. Had I just, again, could I have just, you know, been doing 100 other things and then just turned on the Zoom and maybe my natural brilliance and would have taken to sway? Maybe, but maybe not. And if you really appreciate the significance and the stakes of something, you're not willing to take, you know, leave it to chance. You really want to invest in something. So the Machzor of Victory, source number 3, he says something very, very simple. Similar, we'll just read it briefly. Kol mashehu osek l'asot davar b'chachmato. So he just explains a little bit. That's like Rashi, like the magician's assistant, coming out and explaining how he turned it into a rabbit. How do you take the word chachma and turn it into ma'asim? So Machzor of Victory says, what's Rashi really doing? He means, anytime you're doing, you want to do something bichachma. That's the way Rashi understood the word chachma here. Not as knowledge in the abstract sense, but you want to do something well. You want to do something with knowledge. You want to know what you're doing, we would say. So then, what's the key to doing something well, knowing what you're doing? Well, before you even do it, it's all the preparation, it's all the practice. No sin libo tchila lira et hamakom l'havin lasos shelo yigal gel adavar l'deavera. Okay, very good. Okay, that's the first approach. You know, maybe worth coming just to hear that, because that's just good life advice. It's good to see how Rashi and Rav Masovich creatively do that. But again, it's a tremendous chiddush because it's not really the simple understanding of the Mishnah. And I think it's clear that most Mefarshim do not learn that way. So let's turn our attention now to source number four. And this is a second approach. And this is, I think, the one we'll spend much more time on. And this is based on the Rambam and other Mefarshim who take Chochmah more literally, in the sense that we are talking about knowledge. And now, again, just remind ourselves, these are all the questions we started with. Why does having Yirat Chet, fear of sin, is that going to help my knowledge? Why does one have to come before the other? What exactly are we talking about? So the Rambam in source number four says something very fascinating. And the source number five, the Magen Avos, which is the Tashbeit, a later Rishon, but he in this case also very much elaborates on the same basic approach that you have in the Rambam. So these go together. Source number four of the Rambam says something as follows. He begins, Zed davar muskam alav mina philosophim. You should know, he says, what I'm about to tell you is so compelling and so logical, it's universal. Even the non-Jewish philosophers, obviously he means, you know, the Greek philosophers, even the non-Jewish philosophers, this is kind of the chokhmah you'll hear, you know, nowadays we would say, you know, it's a TED Talk. You know, this is something, you know, this, you'll find this in the Barnes & Nobles, or I guess now there's no, does anyone go to Barnes & Noble anymore? Amazon, you know, under the bestsellers. You know, this is something that everybody knows. This is chokhmah. What's the chokhmah that everybody knows? Shehergel hamalos kishe yakdim lechokhmah, yukadim lechokhmah, ad shi yasugu bekinyan chazak. What is he saying? The Magen Avos says it much easier to understand, but what is he really saying? Hergel hamalos, good habits. Right? There's bad habits too. But good habits, if they come before the knowledge that would otherwise reinforce them, then when you then get the knowledge, it will reinforce. So this is, again, this, as a few people in the room are even the teachers or seminary teachers, or we're all just teachers in life with children, right? This is the classic question, right? It's basically the Nasa Venishma question. Are you going to wait to be persuaded? Are you going to wait to understand? And only then are you going to do? Or are you going to start doing and then let your knowledge catch up with you? Says the Rambam, and again, he doesn't think this is like some magic, mystical, mysterious Torah secret. He says this is universal knowledge of good way of good habits of life. If you start by doing, if you have the good habit, and then you learn why it's a good habit, then that knowledge coming after the fact will reinforce the habit in a way that makes it what he calls a kinyan chazak. It'll really be good. Because once you're already doing something, so it's true, basically what he's saying implicitly is, to do something without truly understanding it is not the most satisfying experience. We can be honest about that. Right? We just had in the shul last week, right? Just to take one example, a group of girls got together to talk about tznius. So tznius is something that for a lot of people is objectively hard, but it's certainly harder if people don't understand why this is important, why they have to do it, or can't do, as the case may be. So helping people understand it doesn't change certain challenges, but it obviously would help, right? So to do something without really understanding why you're doing it could be tefillin, it could be tznius, it could be anything, or it could be a new job and your boss says, do it this way, but why? You'll understand eventually, just do it. So it's not the most satisfying thing. The Rambam implicitly is agreeing with that. He's saying this, but if you start that way, then what you're doing it anyway. Then at some subsequent point, now you understand why you were doing it, and it really makes sense. That, he says, the Rambam, that is an incredibly fulfilling, satisfying, and more than satisfying, he says, it'll give you tremendous passion and enthusiasm and genuine happiness. Because now all of a sudden you say, oh, what I've been doing makes sense. Right, as they used to say when this was relevant, Nafalia Ha'asimon. Do kids still use that? Is that even a phrase that they use anymore? Like, see, in a lot of languages and cultures, you have, you know, slang or state, your cliches that people don't know where they came from. So I could see that being one of those things, you know, where people still said it, even though they don't know what an asimon is. But anyway, or maybe they came up with some other way of saying that. But the point is, when you were doing it, I didn't really understand why. But now that it could be a month, a week, or a year later, but now all of a sudden I understand why, says the Rambam, when you do it that way, you're already doing it anyway, but now that you understand it, it gives you such exhilaration, such feeling of, wow, now I understand it. And what I was doing all along really did make sense. Now that I've been, so to speak, aroused, inspired, enlightened about what I was anyway doing and what my habit was anyway. However, he says, Im kadmu kinyani haros v'achar kach lamad tiyach chachmaso monas mimashe yit'avelo behergel t'chabet olav yashgena. He says this is a side point. Let's say you already had a bad habit and then all of a sudden you learn something. Then the chachma will hopefully stop you from doing what you're doing. That is to say, basically, in the opposite direction, if you start with the chachma, so then, if you say, no, I'm not going to do anything good until I get the chachma. So right now I'm doing X. Now you're going to teach me. Says the Rambam, basically what you're creating is a cognitive dissonance. Because I'm enjoying, again, let's just use the example for a moment that we had mentioned before, sneeze. So I'm going to dress the way I want, what they sell on the mall, which is mostly not tsanua. And then I'm open-minded, I'll go to a class, and if you convince me, I'll do it. So what happened? Now maybe it will work in the end. He's not saying it'll never work. But what you've set up is an immediate problem, which is that everything you're learning is going against what you're doing. What does every bit of human nature tell you to do in that case? To despise what you're learning. When what you're learning is confirming what you're doing, you have a much more positive attitude towards the learning. Which is why, again, I'm not saying by any stretch of the imagination that it always works. But when you have, let's say, I don't know, a girl comes from a Beis Yaakov background and her whole life she was, you know, keeping tzniyas. But maybe they never told her why, because that's not what they're so big on. But then as she gets older and she does learn why, that can be incredibly satisfying, incredibly fulfilling. Again, the risk is that she'll stop before she learned. Okay? And exactly where is that sweet spot? I don't know, and the Rambam's not telling us, you know, age-wise or whatever. But the idea that you started off doing something and you got into it, and then eventually you learned why, that knowledge is incredibly satisfying. You love those classes, you love that knowledge, because it's now persuading you that with all those things I was doing all the time anyway, I'm doing it anyway, now I finally understand. What a great feeling. On the other hand, if I'm doing something else, right now I'm going to McDonald's, but I'm going to go to Eishet Torah and they're going to try to persuade me why I should keep kosher. There's going to be an innate defense mechanism and a resentment and an anger towards the Torah, because each time you're learning something, it's telling me to change. Now maybe eventually it'll be a tipping point and it'll work. It's not saying it won't work. It could work, maybe. Maybe not. But you're inherently building up a certain resentment towards the learning. As opposed to, as he said, the opposite. If you start off with a good habit, just do it. Now eventually you'll learn why. Then when you learn, it'll actually be confirming what you want instead of going against. Again, that's what the Rambam is saying at the end here in Surah number 4. I didn't underline it, but it's very good. If you do the opposite, right, you're waiting, you're doing whatever you want to do. You don't keep kosher, you don't put on tefillin, you're not sanua, but you're learning about those things. Then each time you learn, chachma mona'aso mimashi yit'avelo. Then even your chachma, the things you're learning, are telling you to not do things you want to do. Things you're already doing. That's very, very hard. I've seen this, you know, in the yeshiva world. I've seen it in seminary. And I think maybe the most dramatic example was when I was 30 years ago, I spent the summer training at Eishet Torah, with the discovery seminar, and then the whole year, my second year in yeshiva, like once a month or so, I was like a madrich on Shabbatonim for Hebrew U students who would have like a, you know, a discovery Eishet Torah thing. And you could see it. And I was way too young to appreciate what was going on at the time, and then the rabbis Eishet Torah explained it to me, and it was exactly this. You could see sometimes the more compelling a particular presentation was about the truth of Torah or whatever, there were certain people in the class who would get angry, belligerent. So I thought that means this is a disaster. Oh my gosh, that class didn't go well. Right? Mutti Berger saying, no, that class went very well. Because if he wasn't seeing how persuasive the Torah was, it wouldn't be a conflict to what he was doing. The anger is because of the conflict. The conflict was only happening because he feels like this might actually be true. Now, if you grew up not from, the whole nature of Kiruv, there's no other way around it. Oh, there's no other way around it. Most Kiruv, you're not, that's, the Rambam is describing what you should be doing ideally. Obviously, if you already start, now, as a FYI, in the Kiruv world, there is, I don't know if there's other organizations, but I used to, as an example of this, maybe there's probably, there might be multiple people or multiple groups on both sides of this, but there basically are two paradigms of Kiruv. One is what I just described from Eshet Torah or many a million other examples where you're not religious, somehow you got inspired to be curious, and now we're going to teach you and hopefully eventually we'll persuade you. There's a whole other approach, which is very in line with this Rambam, which is what I used to call, and I think it is still true, maybe there's other people, but I think it is still true in their case, the Chabad approach. Right? What does Chabad do? Can I speak as a man? It's easier. Right? Put on tefillin. What are tefillin? Do they spend time explaining to you? Give you the halachos, they give you the mysticism. No, just put on tefillin. Just make a bracha. Just light candles. They're not explaining anything. The Chabad is very intellectual. It's not that they're never going to explain. But they're not waiting. They want you... Now, the way I always understood that, which was not connected to the Rambam per se, was because they just want you to experience the beauty. And hopefully that'll self-inspire you. The mushal, I think the Rebbe, years ago... Again, I think that I never tracked down the original sources, but many, many years ago, probably also about 30 years ago, when I was really thinking about these topics, somebody told me that, in fact, there was a story. I think it was an Israeli Supreme Court justice, a woman who was secular, who wrote to like 11 big rabbis or something, you know, if you could convince me that Torah is true, I'm willing to, you know, make, you know, go along for the ride. And she wrote Rav Soloveitchik and Rav Feinstein, and I don't know, I don't know if this is even true, but the upshot was... that the Rebbe responded. One of the people she wrote was Lubavitcher Rebbe. And he said, I can't. You're asking me to describe, as an example, he said, it's like asking me to describe what an apple tastes like if you've never tasted an apple. Right? What is a Granny Smith? Well, it's crunchy and it's crispy. It's a little bit tart. Now, everyone at this table knows what I'm talking about because you've had an apple before. As opposed to if I explain to you it's mushy or it's sweet. Because you have a frame of reference. But if you had never tasted an apple before, it would be completely meaningless to you. So I can't describe to you, I can't explain to you the beauty of mitzvos if you've never tasted them. Once you've tasted them, then we can work with a language to put it in. So that's not exactly the same thing the Rambam is saying. But what the Rambam is saying here, I think very much coalesces with, in theory, if you could get people to just live a firm lifestyle, even though they don't understand anything... that actually, it could be very, very effective in a Kiruv sense. Again, the reason most Kiruv organizations don't do that is because most people aren't willing to put on tefillin every day without understanding it. Because you have to try to do your best to explain it to them, and hopefully they will. Fine. But the larger point, and again, this, speaking in our crowd, we're not talking now about a beginner's crowd, we're talking about people who are religious. This is why it's so important with our children to get them as much as possible. Again, I'm not saying there aren't times where we have to let go and we have to give in and whatever. But as a default, the default should be to get our kids to be doing as many of the right things as possible, whether they like it or not, whether they understand or not. Create the good habits. Again, at some point, could there be enough pushback that you're losing? Of course, every case is different, and I could certainly envision many scenarios where this wouldn't work. But those to me are the exceptions, not the rule. The rule, the default is to take kids, boys. They got to go to Minyan. They got to daven every day. They don't like it. Maybe at some point you will relax if it's getting too burdensome or you feel like you're clashing too much or you're turning wild. Again, of course there could be times where you'd have to... But what's the default is get them into the habit. I don't understand it yet. That can come second. Yiroso kodam chachmaso. First get them into the habit of doing it. Then when they'll understand why, it'll be good because, oh, now I understand what I feel good about myself because this thing that now makes so much sense to me I've been doing for all these years. If you just wait till they want to do it, maybe it'll happen, maybe it won't. And anyway, you'll have lost a lot of time. There's a tremendous downside to that. I've observed, sometimes with admiration and sometimes with frustration, different parenting styles. And in many cases, you know, people have come to me for advice. And again, advice has to be tailored to the particular family, the particular child. But to me, it's clear what the default should be. And the default is you want to habituate your kids as much as possible to as many things as possible. But you don't wait, you know, until a girl says, oh, I understand the beauty of tznius, before you tell her she has to wear a skirt. Right? Maybe it'll happen, maybe it won't. And even if it does happen, that's a lot of years. right? The answer is no. You, at a certain age, you start dressing them the way you think they should be dressed. And then you hope that between you and the school, eventually, you know, they'll understand why and want to embrace it. And if not, then you have a challenge. Okay, I'm not being Pollyannish. I'm saying, I'm describing what the ideal is. Of course, life is not always the ideal. But I think it makes a ton of sense. And this is the Rambam's understanding of the Mishnah in a very, very, you know, I think in a powerful way. And I spent a lot of time elaborating on and explaining the Rambam. Really, we're not going to have time to read much of source number 5 inside, even though I gave you a huge chunk of it. But basically, the source number 5, the Magen Avos, is for the most part, making this point that the more you are already doing the right thing, you know, then much more likely when you then learn about it. Again, and he's speaking about, as he puts it, kadima sazman. We are talking about something sequential and chronological. Start with the good habits, and then eventually the other one will come from that. Okay, so that's basically what I would call the Rambam and the Magen Avos, the second approach. That yes, we are talking about knowledge, not about retention of knowledge, but the idea that if it's basically the Nasa Venishma idea. Right. You need a certain minimum knowledge so you don't know what to do. Ein amar tzchassid. This is the Magen Avot in source number 5. He asked this question. How can I say that all of my Yirat Shemayim, all of my mitzvah observance comes before Chochmah? If I don't know what I'm doing, you know, I'll think I'm buying an esrog and I'll be buying a lemon. Right? You have to have some minimal knowledge. But once you have that minimal knowledge, then do. And then eventually when you learn, then each one will be, it's a reinforcing thing, right? When you learn, right, if you were learning about kashrus in general, but never actually had to make a kosher meal, it's too abstract. All of a sudden, when you finally make that kosher meal, you know, back in the day when you had to actually salt your own meat or other things you had to do, right, all of a sudden, there's a click, right? So the action reinforced the prior knowledge. But the other point is also true, which is that if you've been already doing it, then the fact that you had the action, you know, you already had, then the knowledge will reinforce the action reinforces the knowledge. Okay, so that's basically this approach. And in a certain sense, there's a certain technicality. Why is Yirat Shemayim, in the sense of practice, should come first? Because it's better on a practical level. However, if you take a look at the bottom of source number 5, just the last few words, you'll see that I alluded to, he quotes a number of Gemaras. Shabbos, Yuma, ta-ta-ta-ta. And there, I didn't, you know, give it to you in his quotation because I gave you the actual sources below in sources 6 and 7. He quotes other Gemaras, which it seems to me, these other Gemaras, and this is really the second half of his presentation, present a second approach, another version of this, which is not practical, but maybe there is something more fundamental. And this is what I want to spend the last part of the shiur on, which is that there may be an even more fundamental way to look at the relationship between Yira, you know, genuine desire to do the right thing, and book knowledge and Torah. So take a look, for example, at source number 6, a very famous Gemara, Masechta Shabbos. The Gemara is elaborating on, interpreting, darshaning the well-known pasuk in the Navi Yeshayahu in Perek Lamed Gimel that basically has all these phrases of Yiyu Emunah Si'itecha, Chosin Yeshuos, Chochma V'das, 6 different phrases, and says the Gemara very famously, these 6 phrases refer to the 6 different books of the Mishnah, as we might be singing at the end of the Pesach Seder. Right, so Amunah, that refers to Zroim, right? Because the farmer has to have a lot of faith. Itecha, which is a phrase of time, that relates to Seder Moed, all the Mishnayos and the Halacha about the calendar. Chosen, it's Nashim for whatever reasons. Yeshua, that's Nezikin. This one is Kochim, the Karbonos. Das is Taros, fine. But then what's the end of the Pasuk? After listing all these phrases, which are understood to be metaphors, poetic metaphors for Mishnah, the last phrase of the pasuk is "Va'afilu hachi." What's the quote? "Yiras Hashem hi otzaro." Yirat Shemayim. Now, of course, that rings a bell because that's from our Mishnah. Same phrase. Yirat Shemayim is the otzar. Now, what is an otzar? How would you translate an otzar?
Treasure.
Right. Or what else can an otzar be? In this context, it does not mean treasure. What does it mean? It's a utensil or something that holds things. An otzar hatzfarim, right? So says Rashi, Hush ikar hachashuv be'enav la'etzor la'sot skula lizikaron. So Rashi, skula, otzar kind of thing, but what he seems to be getting at, and we're going to see this a little bit when we see some other sources, is that Yirat Shamayim somehow is the Otsar, is the key, let's for now call it just very vaguely, it's the key. You want to have all these six things, you want to master all of Torah? So what would you think? Diligence, get a good teacher, have good chavrusas, go to good shiurim. Those are all academic things. But says the apostle, Yiras Hashem Otsaro. What's going to be the key that's going to hold it? Yirat Hashem. Take a look at source number 7, and Rashi there in 8 explains the Gemara. Very powerful, underscoring this point, which we don't yet understand, but we're heading in the right direction. Says the Gemara, from a different pasuk now, Mishlei, Perek Yud Zayin. Lama ze mechir biyad kisil, liknos chachma v'lev ayin. How foolish is it for an imbecile, an unlearned person, to waste his time learning v'lev ayin? He doesn't even care about it. Right? It's foolish. Silly. What does the pasuk mean? Says the Gemara. Underline number 7. Oy lehem l'sonehem shel tamid chachamim she'oskin b'torah b'yirat shamayim. How ridiculous, how foolish is it for people who don't have yirat shamayim to anyway learn? He doesn't say what the problem is, but he's ridiculing it. Then Rabbi Yanai says, chaval al deles ledarta v'tara ledarta ovid. What does that mean? So as Rashi explains, woe is to the person who has no courtyard but builds a door. And you can build a door frame and a door, but there's nothing, it's not leading to anything. It says, finally, the Rava to the Rabbanon, yeah, if you're that kind of person, you learn a lot of Torah, but you have no Yirat Shamayim, you're not really living it. Bimatusa minaychu lo tirton tarti gehenim. Says, then you have the worst of both. Because you're learning, you're going to, you know, it's a hard life. You're not necessarily even going to enjoy this life. But because you didn't really keep the mitzvos, you're not even going to get Olam Haba. What would you gain from it? Look at Rashi. Rashi, source number 8, explaining the Gemara. What does this mean to build the door without having a courtyard? HaTorah eina ela sha'ar likanes ba liyira shamayim. Now we're getting somewhere. Says Rashi, what was the Gemara getting at? And again, if you remember, source number 5, Magen Avos, quotes this Gemara at the end. What's the relationship between Yirat Shamayim, Yirat Chet, and Chochma, and Torah, and learning? So it says Rashi, what do you see from this Gemara? That the ultimate telos, the ultimate purpose of learning, is to actualize that learning. And therefore, if you're learning without any intention, again, I don't mean that you're imperfect and once you messed up. We all slip on the banana peel every now and then. But we're talking about people who don't have any interest in doing the right thing. So then what was the point of all the learning? Rather, that's foolish. And then as he points out in the end, in a similar way, you know, if you spend all your time learning, but don't actually live up to it, what have you gained? You're going to go to Gehenna anyway. But I think I particularly find the doorway metaphor so, it's vivid and it's powerful. You know, we, especially colloquially, we often use, you know, there are gateways. We use that sometimes in a negative way, a gateway drug. Right? There are gateways, right? There are certain things which we appreciate now are not just important in and of themselves, but because they are like a slippery slide that take us who knows where. Sometimes that's for good. There are gateways in a good way. There are gateways in a bad way. Right? Very often, again, not exclusively, sometimes as adults we have trouble seeing that too, but kids in particular have trouble seeing this. Now, why are you not letting me do this? What's the big deal? And as a parent or as a teacher, because it's not this. You're right. This is only a one or a two. But once you do this one or a two, you're much more apt to slide into who knows what. So in a good way, says the Gemara, Torah is supposed to be the gateway to living the moral life, to living the good life, right? To have all the Torah, but then not do any of it. It's like building a door with nowhere to go. You're waiting online, but there is no roller coaster. What's the point? That's very, very powerful. You turn over the page. One more source, I think, that kind of to underscore this idea is Chazal and Avos Rabbi Nosson. And this is really maybe the most stark. Amru lefnei Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Chacham v'yarei chet mahu. Okay, this is the ideal. Again, this is a very parallel text to the Mishnah we started with. I have both. I have Yiras Shemayim, and I have Torah. I'm learning, I'm doing, I'm humming. Amru lehem hariza uman ukli umunaso biyado. What's the metaphor? What's the poetic image? You are like a master craftsman who has whatever it is, right? You're known to be a cobbler, and you got the beautiful shoes in front of you, or the leather to make the shoe. You are a glass blower, and you have the glass, you know, or whatever the right, you know, the sand, whatever it is you're going to do. You have all the things you need, right? You're the right person with the right raw material. But chacham ve'en yareche, what a person was, did all this learning, but didn't have the yiret shamayim. That's what was, the Mishnah was telling us not to be. What is that person like? Amar lehem, harei ze uman, ve'en kli umanaso biyado. That's great. You are the you're like an uman, but you have nothing to work with. You have no raw material. What about a yarei chait? The ein chacham mahu. What if you have yiras shemaim, but you're not a chacham? Then ein ze uman aval kli umanaso biyado. Then you're a guy who has the kli but doesn't know what he's doing with it. In other words, what we see here in all of these sources, and I think maybe most clearly in source number 10, is something very fundamental. It's not practical. What we're saying is, Torah makes you into the uman. Torah is what transforms you into the kind of person who then is ra'ui. I misspoke, excuse me, that was... In any other context, it would have been an irrelevant misspeak, but in this case, it made all the difference. Yerushamayim, I should say, I'm sorry. Yerushamayim is what turns you into the uman. That's what makes you the kind of person who'll know what to do with the leather, who'll know what to do with the shoe. You're not the kind of person who can even, you don't have anything to do. The mitzvahs are meaningless to you, the Torah is meaningless to you, unless you're a certain type of person, unless you're already an uman. In other words, what I think all these sources are getting at is something, even as much as we thought there was a lot of wisdom in that Rambam that we saw before, but this I think is going one step further. This is saying it's not just a practical point. It makes sense to have the good habits and then reinforce the habits as opposed to the other direction. This is saying something more fundamental. You cannot analogize Torah to another wisdom in a sense, because Torah is not purely intellectual. Torah is an intellectual pursuit, but it's also ultimately a spiritual pursuit. And you have to be the right kind of person in order to be qualified, or simply suitable, maybe even the best word, suitable to retain Torah. Why is it that without Yirat Shamayim, your Chachma will not be Mitkayim, using the language of the Mishnah we started with? Because then you are not the right kind of person to retain Torah to begin with. Now, the most dramatic interpretation of this Mishnah that makes this point is source number 11. And I don't think anyone who's sitting at this table was with me at 1 in the morning, but on... was anybody at the table? I don't think... Was anyone at my house at 1 in the morning? Your daughter came to a later shir. But at my 1 in the morning shir, I spoke a lot about this Nefesh HaChaim, this source number 11. You had many other sources from the same sefer, but this is Reb Chaim Volozhiner, of course, the prime disciple of the Vilna Gaon, founder of the famous Volozhin Yeshiva, and in his magnum opus, Nefesh HaChaim, the famous Shardal, the fourth section, he discusses this in a very big way. And this is really, I think, very, very fundamental and powerful point. He says, source number 11, Vara yefshar lomer shein tzarech linyan esek haTorah shum Torah machshava v'yir Hashem chalila. On the one hand, and this was a context from what I was discussing on Shavuos, the Nefesh HaChaim, very much, let's say, against the Balatanya and other thinkers, feels that learning for learning's sake is the ultimate. And we don't have to come to the learning with these preconceived or prior goals of, I want to have a commune with God, and I want to... No, you're learning, you have to... That's already de-emphasizing and devaluing the text. The text of Torah is worthy of being a goal in and of itself. But yet, after having made that point, says the Nefesh HaChaim, but don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying that Yerushalayim is irrelevant. I'm not saying that you could be a Chai Behema in your personal life, but if you learn well, that's a good thing. Of course you need your Shemayim. And how does he prove this? He quotes, if you skip a few lines, he quotes the Gemara and Shabbos that we saw on the other side of the page. The one that said, yes, you have the sixth Siddharm of Mishnah, but Yiras Hashem, he Otsaro. How does he understand that to be Otsaro? As I mentioned before, you take a look where it's underlined now. Dima HaKosuv, the Pasuk there, the Gemara quoted, that Pasuk, it's comparing Torah to Rav Tvuot. All the different types of tefuah, all the different grains, that's Torah. And the more Torah you learn, it's like amassing more and more grain. It's a farmer who has a bumper crop. He has a huge harvest. It's great. What do you do with the huge harvest? Hayira la'otzer hamachzik bo hamona tvus umishtamrim b'tocho. You got to put them somewhere. You need a silo. You need a barn. You need something to hold them. Or else they'll just get ruined and blown away and trampled by the animals. Yira shamayim, i.e. what, making yourself into that right kind of person, that makes you this kind of person who's suitable to hold, to maintain the Torah. Yira shamayim hiya otzer l'chachmas ha-Torah kadosha, sh'al yada titkayim etzal adam. The only way to keep the Torah is to be the kind of person who's Yira shamayim. V'im lo hi heichin lo adam t'chila. Again, what was our language of our Mishnah? Kodemes. Yes, it has to come first. First, you have to turn yourself into a kli kibul. You have to make yourself into the kind of person who is suitable for Torah with the Otzer of Yira. If you don't do that, Hari Rav HaTuot HaTorah Kemunach Al Pnei Asada Lemir Mas Regel HaShor V'HaChamor Chas V'Shalom Shein Mit Kemet Etzlo Klal. Yes, you learned a ton. You spent 10 hours learning. And you don't keep any of it a day or two a week later. Why? Because it went in, but it went right out. Because Torah, this is not talking about the science of memory. He's discussing something much more metaphysical. He's saying that fundamentally, Torah has to be in an environment which can be suitable for it. It is a very delicate property, right? In chemistry and in physics, right? There are certain things that are more stable and things that are less stable. In this sense, Torah is very unstable. It will only be maintained and sustained in the right environment. You need to create first the right type of environment, a suitable utensil to hold the Torah, and then you pour the Torah in. If you pour the Torah in, but you're not yet the kind of person who is suitable, then it's too unstable, it will not last. In the next paragraph, he doubles down on the metaphor, and he describes a father or a parent, right, who wants to give a ton away to his children. Here, I'm giving you, here, come. But there's a limit. The limit is not in the love of the father or the mother, right? The father wants to give everything to the child. But depending on how big a basket the child comes with, right? You can't put in more tefillah than the child can hold. The more the child can hold, the more the father is happy to give. So Hashem, of course, in the metaphor, wants to give us all the Torah. But we have to be suitable for it. If we're not, then it doesn't matter. And he makes this point over and over again. We don't need to see the rest of it inside, but he underscores that point. And this, I would say, is really a third approach, right? We started off by saying there was the Rashi approach. This wasn't about Torah study at all. It was just that, you know, if you don't take things seriously, you're not likely to do them well. So Yira Shamayim means I have the appropriate fear, right? You know, you don't just wander into an interview, right? You really, if this is a job you want, you take it seriously beforehand. Etc., etc. That was the first approach. The second approach we saw was, no, it is about learning, but this is the Rambam approach. And that is, what should come first? Your learning or the good habits and the good deeds? The Rambam was saying, as a practical matter, from an advice perspective, if you start off with the good deeds and then you learn why they're good, then that will reinforce what you were doing. As opposed to, if you're not doing it, but you learn about it, then you're creating, by definition, a cognitive dissonance. You're immediately chafing at the learning. Right? Anyone who's ever been in a class, it could be a seminary class, it could be any class where you're learning Hilchos Shabbos. It doesn't just have to be Tznius, that's like the boogeyman. I'm saying, but even Hilchos Shabbos. Why are people getting annoyed at the Hilchos Shabbos thing? Because it's telling them that they're doing things wrong. Who wants to it could be there was a great shiur with a great rabbi from a great book or a great whatever. But it's natural for most people to chafe at something that's right, if the whole time, their whole life, their mother was always teaching them, this is how you make ice, or you don't make ice on Shabbos, this is how you cut the salad, or this is, you can't make a double knot on Shabbos. You never understood why. Then you finally reach a certain age, and all of a sudden someone's teaching you why. Oh, that's actually great. Now I understand it. Right, so that was the Rambam, very practical. But again, very important, very practical. This third approach, I think, is something more fundamental. And that is, Yira Shamayim has to come first, not in the sense of it's practical, do the right thing and then reinforce your habits with knowledge. But that if you don't, it's talking about knowledge, but the nature of Torah is that it's not just like science or computers or math or chess or whatever else. Maybe those things you don't need to be, you know, whoever you are, if you have the right brain or if you had just put in the diligence, right? It was Bertrand Russell, right, had the famous quote. He was an ethics professor, but apparently he lived a very unethical life. And he was asked, you know, how could that be? And he looked at the person like he was crazy. Like, why should one have to do with the other? And if I taught geometry, should I be a triangle? There was no connection. So that, I'm not sure that's the best argument even in a secular world. But from a Torah perspective, it's a complete non-starter. Because the whole nature of Torah is that it's only going to be retained, let alone mastered, by someone who is a appropriate kli kibul. Yiras Hashem hi itzaro. Being the right kind of person is what allows the Torah to be maintained. And that is much, much more fundamental. We don't have that much time, but I'll just mention the last few sources on the sheet are relating to that second half of the Mishnah. And we had mentioned that here we had not Yiras Shamayim in proportion or compared to, relating to knowledge, but Ma'asav, and how you need to have Ma'asav Merubin Michachma, do more good deeds than having a chachma. So what is going on with that? So in source number 13, you have very beautifully Rabbeinu Yonah, who says something very similar to what the Rambam had said. But Rabbeinu Yonah says, in very almost identical, if you take a look, he says, if you already are doing things, ma'asav merubin, if you're already doing them, then, second line of source number 13, ta'avasol chachma gedola michachmato, then you're going to want to learn. Because I'm doing it anyway. Most people are curious enough that they want to understand what they're doing. Not everybody, but most people on some level don't want to do things completely blindly, not forever. So what's the best motivator to learn? Once you're doing it, then you're going to be motivated to want to understand. You want to close the knowledge gap. And maybe this is also part of the genius of the Lubavitcher Rebbe approach. Right? Do it, and then you're going to want to understand why. So that's what there have been, and that's very similar to what the Rambam had said. Okay, and again, I think that's a very, very important point. But if you take a look at source number 15, and with this we'll conclude, here we have another source, which I think makes this second half of the Mishnah actually more comparable, not to the Rambam, but to the Nefesh HaChayim. The idea that we have to transform ourselves. Take a look at source number 15 from Chazal Avos Rabbi Nasan. He said, again, he's commenting on this Mishnah, Ma'asav, you know, have to be, if you have a lot of Ma'asav, then eventually the Torah will be Mitkayim. So what's this comparable to? Moshal Madar Adoma, Lechad Shabbat Eitzel Chenvani. You go to the shopkeeper and you say to him, give me a Raviyat of Yain. Here, can I have, again, in those days you didn't have nice bottles of Bartanura or of Rashi wine, right? You had to, you know, they had it in a big vat or something, and you know, you had to, so what does the shopkeeper say? Havili Kli. Okay, well, you were supposed to bring the wine bottle. Instead, you opened up your purse. You don't have a wine bottle. Then, Amarle, you say to the person, can I have a certain amount of oil? So what does he say? Again, did you bring the special thing for the oil? And you opened up a different purse. You don't have any kalim. Amar lei, so the chenvani says, you idiot, ben meira. Kli ein biyadcha. V'ata mevakesh litol yayim v'shemen. You don't have any utensils. You don't have a wine bottle. You don't have a flask for the oil. And yet you want me to give you these things? It's ridiculous. It's absurd. Kacha kadosh baruch hu amar l'rishayim. Ma'isim tovim, ein biyadchem. Atem mevakshim lomo Torah. So what this Avos Rabbi Nasan has done is exactly about good deeds, meaning doing mitzvos, exactly what the Nefesh HaChaim had done with Yerushamayim. Right? There are two basic, if you put it all together, what the Mishnah is basically telling us is our inner life, which only Hashem knows. Right? Rashi, in previous few parshios, Rashi all the time, you know, talks about how, you know, there's so many things that only Hashem knows if you're, you know, what your real motivation is. If you're, you know, it could be all sorts of things, right? So your inner life, are you genuinely trying to do the right thing? Are you genuinely committed to doing the right thing? Right? Anyone could say that, but that's the first half of the mission is all about your inner life. Your Shemayim, that's very emotional. That's very private. That's very internal. The second half of the mission is talking about things which are much more, you know, practical, you know, concrete. Your actions. Are you doing the right thing? So the Mishnah had said, if you're more focused on doing the right thing, even than learning, then the learning will work. Well, why? So again, one approach which we just saw from Rabbi Yonah was practical. The more you do, the more you're likely to want to learn because you want to close the knowledge gap. No one feels, you know, good doing things they don't understand. So you're motivated to learn about what you were doing anyway. But Avos Rabbi Nosson is saying something much more similar to Rabbi Yonah. To what we saw from Rav Chaim Volozhiner. And that is, it's not about a practical point. As true and as good advice as those practical points are, I think they're very good. But he's saying something more fundamental. And that is that just like we had previously learned, that your Yirah Shamayim, your inner life, transforms you into a person that is worthy of Torah, so too your actions and your deeds. Being that kind of person is ultimately what the kind of person where Hashem is going to want to give the Torah to. Right? If you don't have the right deeds, or in the earlier part of the Mishnah, the right Yirah Shamayim, so then you're like the person who shows up to the store and says, can I have, you know, a kilo of wine, and you didn't bring a jug. What's the point? It's going to go right? Or you showed up with the spaghetti strainer. So you're going to pour all the wine in, it's going to come right out. And ultimately, just with this we conclude, what I think emerges from this Mishnah and these interpretations is something very, very powerful, which is that the ultimate goal, I mean, you just have to, if you reverse engineer what the Mishnah is now telling us, is that what is the ultimate goal of the Torah study to begin with? Is for the person to be with Yirah Shamayim, i.e. to have the right internal life, and to then be doing the right things. Again, there's a very fascinating circular relationship between these. The goal of Torah is to be that kind of person, and to be that kind of person is the only way you'll be able to get the Torah. So life, if you were thinking I was going to tell you life is easy, you came to the wrong chair. But life is about trying to do both of those, not getting too far ahead in either one direction, but understanding that in each case, there's no Torah without knowledge. So there's no Torah without Yirah Shamayim and doing the mitzvos, but there's no long-term future for doing mitzvos without learning either. Right? If you grew a huge tree or a huge flower, but there was no soil to hold the roots, eventually it'll fall over. Even if you were that kind of person who did tons of mitzvos, even though you didn't understand why, that's like a plant without any soil holding it down. It's gonna eventually it'll fall over under its own weight. You need both. And if you can combine those, so then that's the ultimate goal of not only learning, but that's the ultimate way of living the good life. Okay?